Hey Dave, really enjoyed your Blackmore episode. Yeah, lots of similar sensibilities. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't feel so bad about accidentally calling you Dave Arneson in some earlier episodes. Okay, I do feel bad about that, but, you know, sometimes things happen. Really, though, I am looking forward to this. I hope I can get in a couple games. I know my schedule's gotten really wonky lately. But, yeah, it's really cool stuff. You go back to these early... I'll tell you, the other one you might really enjoy reading through is Dave Hargrove's Arduin. I'll send you a link. Unfortunately, you can't get legal PDFs of that now, and it's stupid expensive. But, yeah, lots of wacky, crazy stuff in that, too. So it's another really early campaign. It's really interesting to see how these guys looked at these early campaigns and thought about it. You know, Arduin is basically riffs. You know, it's kind of a riff setting. But, no, Blackmore's going to be great. Really looking forward to it, sir.
From fairy tales to happenstance, the dice rule every random chance. Take off your coat and stay a while, we'll roll in that deep percentile.
Right, so I'm reading DA1, Adventures in Blackmore, by Dave Arneson and David Ritchie. Dense text, maybe 8 or 9 point font over 3 columns. It's a bit daunting, and that's the thing with all these old modules. I look at them, I think, what can I mine? What can I get out of these? And you look at it, just all this dense grey text. And then pages and pages and pages of background info. I really do like modern design. Lay out what you need on a double page spread, bullet points, you know, tags, key tags, just the info there for the GM, some trust that we can fill in the gaps with our own flowery descriptive language. So I do find these daunting and a bit frustrating. You just want to get all the good ideas out of them. You see these blocks of text. On the other hand, I'm presuming David Ritchie has done most of the writing. I don't know. But having read the first fantasy campaign, seen Arneson's writing, I'm pretty sure that it's David Ritchie, who's not a name I know particularly well, will have led on most of this. Although you do get pages and pages and pages of background, it is really quite well written. I rarely make myself sit down and read these things cover to cover. I usually try and dive into the adventure and then go back for it. But I'm trying to do this properly, and I will say it's really well written. I mean, it is just a history of campaigns and diplomacy leading up to the situation the adventurers find themselves in, which is a pretty quirky way of starting an adventure. I'm not going to say too much about that in case I use some of it, spoil it for my players. But there's a nice little, I mean, the conceit is that this is set in the known world, Mystara. I don't know if it's called that yet, but it's 3,000 years in the past. So they've taken the Blackmore world and said, yes, that exists. 3,000 years in the past of the of the current D&D world. And then they find a way of getting the player characters there from the contemporary age, and it's a nifty way. It's got a nice idea, but before you can get to that, you have to read these pages and pages. But they're, you know, actually they're quite historically satisfying. You know, they seem to be written with a mature historical sense, and they are quite readable. So I'm pleasantly surprised by that. As I say, David Ritchie, not a writer I know much about. But really, really quite interesting and readable. However, you're then given a box text to read the players as an intro, and it goes over more than an entire page of this 3-column, 8 or 9 point font, dense text. No way. There's no way I am reading that novel to my players before we can start the session. I mean, I should say, I'm not going to run these. I mean, this is for expert levels, starts at level 10. I'm mining them for game world details that I can put together in a different way. But it does just make me chuckle. Really? Did people read this stuff out? Did they make the players sit through this? I'm really enjoying going through these three generations of material. I've got the original Blackmore supplement, which I'm sort of parceling up with Arneson's first fantasy campaign for Judges Guild. You've got a bit of a dungeon there in Temple of the Frog, but otherwise you've got a sort of confusing jumble of campaign notes. And then you've got the DA modules, those four modules, which are really well written, but I don't find super approachable in terms of mining for information. And then you've got the third edition Blackmore supplements by Zeitgeist Games, which are really readable. I'm having really good fun. They've got some beautiful maps in there. Oh, my dog wants to come out with me. I'll let him out and he'll bark. Come on then, Ed. At least he's barking outside rather than inside. So there's floor plans in the you've got a Blackmore campaign guide, and you've got a few supplements of different types, modules. I think they started doing gazetteer type stuff, but they didn't get very far with that. But in the modules, you've got Temple of the Frog there, you've got your Valley of the Ancients. You've got, because it's for third edition, they've given you 20 levels of Blackmore Castle dungeon. These could all save me some time, having these. They're presented in a satisfying old school way. I could just appropriate these layouts, but of course I won't. I won't do that. One of the things, I mean, that's the third edition stuff is the most immediately, it's really nicely laid out and presented, it's the most immediately approachable. But it is, although it's, you know, it's got a preface by Arneson, he gets a co-writing credit for the campaign guide, but it really has been third editioned. I think additional races are introduced there to sort of sort out some of the different presentations of hobbits, as Arneson does call them. Hobbits in Blackmore, from the way halflings went in third edition, you've got additional small races being chucked in there. I don't think I'm going to go down that route, and obviously all the encounter tables for the levels have all been third editioned with sort of official third edition creatures. I'm going to be avoiding all of that stuff, but I'm enjoying, I've got all this material, and I'll be overlaying an additional generation of campaign design, if you like. So really just drawing on the Blackmore material for inspiration, ignoring it where I don't want it, trying to capture some of the gonzo charm of it. But then my own campaign prep is going to be more of the order of old school essentials, or quite inspired still by the way campaign design is set out in the Black Hack. So I'll start off with just a few hexes. Just a flower shape of 19 hexes. There you go. There's some interesting places you can explore. Lots and lots of random tables for what they might find in those hexes. Perhaps two or three dungeon locations, some much smaller, some much bigger, on there with a view to expanding it out. I was tempted to just lift, there's a beautiful map of Blackmore and the surrounding area in the third edition guide. I was tempted to just lift that and give it to the players. I definitely think the players should have a map. I think it's fun for them just to be able to look at the map and say, we'll go there, and then deal with getting lost or whatever. I find communication around, if players get lost and they're trying to map, it just bogs me down in, was it this way, was it that way? I don't want to get involved in that. So I like it if the players can just say, we want to go to that hex. You know, like it, the way it's done in the One Ring, everybody gets the hex map. There it is. If you get lost, well, hopefully you'll work it out as you recognise the environment. But at least they're not trying to map as they go. They're just trying to work out which hex they're in. I think that's an important difference. In the Dark Sun game, you know, they started off with a blank hex map and were filling it out. Of course, whenever they got lost, they were trying to backfill. So I'm very much of the opinion of giving them the hex map, and then getting lost is just them perhaps not knowing quite which hex they're in, rather than trying to redraw their map, which gets us into all kinds of difficulties. But I'm not, in any case, I'm not going to give them, although it's beautiful and I could quite happily work from it, I'm not going to give them that. I'm going to give them something much smaller, and I'll keep adding to it as they expand outwards. So the world isn't completely unknown to them, just the particular locations of particular things will still need to be discovered. But I think that's important, that they have a sense of what's out there, and they can say, right, let's head out there. For how I'm going to arrange it, I'm wary of whether I'm going to call it, I haven't decided whether I'm going to call it West Marches, drop in, drop out. I think it's settled down that I have a relatively stable core of players, but I need to be a little bit flexible about which night things are on. So I'm happy to move things around, but I think I'm going to have a relatively stable core of players, whilst not closing it down to people that want to drop in and drop out. But I think then within that, you know, every now and again I'll just chuck a rumour or a tavern quest at them to make sure they still understand their options. But then absolutely just say, look, you're starting there, you know what you need to do, golden monsters for XP, it's entirely up to you, there's your map, where do you want to go? Continue to be pleased about the way the setting coincides with my sensibilities. So I've talked about the fact you've got spacemen, spaceships, all kinds of tech in there. You've also got clockwork and steam, mechanical men. Again, my players are going to be not more clockwork, not more mechanical men, mechanical people. They feature quite prominently in my other games, my other settings, but you know, I just like all that stuff. I'll be able to sneak in black powder, I think. So yeah, on the other hand, you've got a location on that map called the Peaks of Boo. I like things to be gonzo and strange and bizarre and productive of funniness, but I don't like just putting puns there on the map. I don't know. Right, so we'll go with one hex equals 12 miles. That's somewhere in the middle of the, using simple encumbrance, somewhere in the middle of the encumbrance table. That's how far a heavily armoured character who is unencumbered can travel in a day. Works well for the maths. So yeah, it's Saturday afternoon. I'm going to get started populating those hexes. So I'm going to take the very useful third edition hex map that I've got, which happens to have, I think, one hex there is 12.5 miles. So that will do nicely. So that will give me a general sense. But then it's important for the players that, well, I just think it's important for the campaign that I don't map out too far straight away. You know, I like the old, there's just empty space around the map, and as we forge off into that empty space, I'll kind of decide what's there. So I'm not running this campaign out of the book, but as a nice kind of starting point, I'm going to sit down with that guide and start populating my first 19 hexes, and then I'll give some indications of what might be further on outside the hex in six directions of travel. I might start populating those, but I think I'll design the map in those concentric rings, so there's always something, I always know what's up ahead for the characters, depending on what direction they choose to go in. Yeah, I'm quite relishing that as an afternoon activity. Where to start them off? I'll probably start them off in Boo, near the Peaks of Boo, just to be belligerent with myself.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to contact Dave, please leave a message on Anchor, email dpercentile@gmail.com or find him on Twitter @d_percentile.